of graduate students because they need to make timely progress toward their degrees. So I did a lot of remote conferencing. I also continued some of my service activities, as I didn't want my sabbatical to cause undue disruption. I was on a high-level search committee, for example, so I video conferenced in for those meetings and interviews. However, I did have a reprieve from some of my service activities, as well as from my usual undergraduate teaching, and that allowed me to pursue, in addition, some scholarly projects that would typically be difficult given the pace of a normal semester. I completed a comprehensive review of the last 30 years of research in my field, more than 1,000 published journal articles, and that piece is scheduled to be published this year in one of the top journals in my area. And one of the things I think this piece can really highlight is how my research benefits from lying at the intersection of two of the university's real strengths. There is no stronger group of language researchers anywhere in the world, and the University of Illinois was one of the birthplaces of the electrophysiological techniques that I use in my work. In parallel with that piece, I created a review of my area at the undergraduate or interested layperson level. This has been published in an online encyclopedia. I'm using that piece this semester in my undergraduate course, so it's helped me bring my research into my teaching, and I hope that it can serve a similar function for other instructors around the world. So in sum, my sabbatical significantly enhanced my skills, my productivity, and also my teaching. I anticipate that the products of my time spent on sabbatical will help continue my funding and highlight some of the university's strengths. And of course, in the longer term, I hope that my laboratory's research program, enhanced now by the data I was able to collect on sabbatical, will help us come to understand better how the brain processes language and thereby allow us eventually to better predict and perhaps ameliorate the consequences of brain damage for language. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions or any committee members wish to add anything to our report? Okay, well, thank you very much. I'd like to remind everyone our next meeting will be May 19th at 3 o'clock, and we think we'll have as good as an attendance at that meeting as we did yesterday. And thank all of the presenters for your excellent work. Thank you.
I think at this point we're going to hear a presentation on diversity at the university. This has become a part of a regular presentation at each of our board meetings. Chancellor Easter spoke earlier of his hope to maintain the preeminence of the university at an international level, and there is no way to do that without being cognizant of our diverse workforce, our diverse student population, our diverse leadership, our diverse supply chain. We hope we will continue to focus on those issues. I think, Stan, if you could introduce the presentation, that'd be terrific.
We are deliberately looking at a different aspect of the diversity challenge at each of our meetings. This meeting, we're going to focus on faculty diversity, looking at how accomplishments at one level began to build a base for accomplishments at another. So, Dr. Rao, please come up and get us started.
Thank you, President Eikenberry, and thank you, Chairman Kennedy. At the November board meeting, we gave you a broad overview of diversity, and in January, we focused on minority-owned businesses. I just want to reiterate that our three campuses define diversity broadly to embrace all aspects of human difference, including gender, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, disability, socioeconomic status, status as a veteran, geographical diversity, and religion. Why is diversity important? In her opinion on the Grutter versus Bollinger case in 2003, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor spelled this out very clearly. These benefits are not theoretical but real, as major American businesses have made clear that the skills needed in today's increasingly global marketplace can only be developed through exposure to widely diverse people, cultures, ideas, and viewpoints. There's compelling evidence in the literature, including from many fine University of Illinois scholars, that institutional commitment to diversity benefits all students a positive educational outcome and is essential to create a welcoming climate. Emphasis needs to be given to groups that have been historically underrepresented, excluded, marginalized, or discriminated against. If discrimination and injustice was not present, we would not need special initiatives. So today's presentation will focus on diversity in our faculty, including recruitment, faculty development, retention, and leadership opportunities. Our diverse faculty are nationally and internationally recognized scholars who are African American, Asian, Caucasian, Latino-Latina, and Native American. We recruit them from some of the top universities in the nation, both public and private, at different stages of their career. And some of our places we recruit from are listed below at the bottom part of the slide. We recruit our faculty for the strengths they'll bring to the discipline and the campus, and we attract them because of our own strengths, our students, our infrastructure offerings, like the Beckman Institute, an example of which you just saw with Kara Fedemeyer, our support systems, and our competitiveness in the marketplace. To create a university that values multicultural perspectives, we need to attract a diverse faculty. To do this, we are changing the methods of recruiting. We're reaching out to non-traditional sources of advertising. We're networking in a much broader perspective, and we are having our search committees undergo special search committee training. Why special search committee training? Because there is a substantive literature, again, some of which is contributed to by our own faculty, on subconscious biases in the traditional methods of search committee operation. The competition in the academic marketplace is especially stiff for traditionally underrepresented faculty. Why is that the case? The pipeline is not robust, and the pyramid needs to be fortified. More underrepresented undergraduate students need to be attracted to graduate school, which in turn will lead to a greater pool for the professoriate. We at the University of Illinois and all our campuses are contributing to the pipeline, and in some cases, we are recruiting our own trainees, and I'll give you an example of that in a little bit. Not all of our disciplines have adequate numbers or distribution of underrepresented faculty. And while programs and departments such as Latino and Latin American Studies, African American Studies, traditionally have a larger percentage of underrepresented faculty, our faculty in health sciences, education and social work, biological and health sciences, humanities, law school, social work is increasing. We've had the pleasure of witnessing one of our stars, and university scholar, Professor Ollie Watt Davis, last night. She's the founding director of the Black Sacred Music Symposium, director of the Black Chorus, which is highly sought after, often serving as student ambassadors at U of I. You've heard other examples from Chancellor Easter this morning, Todd Coleman and Linford Goddard of the Urbana campus. You'll also be approving Professor Ollie Watts Davis's sabbatical later this afternoon. She's but one example. These are but a few examples. We have others who've been elected to the National Academies, who have won Emmys, who have been named university scholars at both Chicago, at all three of our campuses, who have received national awards for making a difference. For example, Ida Giacello, who's made differences in studying health disparities in the Latino-Latina community. We have a faculty of diversity who hold endowed chairs, such as the Gutskill Professorship, the Swanland Chair, and the Wepner Chair. So how diverse exactly is our faculty? I'd first like to present our gender representation. A focused effort to improve the gender representation in our faculty was initiated by the younger Dr. Eikenberry during his previous sojourn.
Oh my.
Sorry. During his previous sojourn as president. I just was testing to see if
he's in a protected class now.
You're right, he is.
No more cheap shots.
It was only a compliment. Okay. Since then, the trend has continued, and over the last decade, we've made a modest increase in the percentage of female faculty in all three campuses. However, again, this is not uniform across the disciplines, the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, the STEM disciplines, being a good example. Concerted efforts in the colleges of engineering, both at Urbana as well as at UIC, has, however, increased women representation. In Urbana, in the last 8 years, the women representation have increased from 6% to 10%, And efforts at UIC actually have increased the women from 11.7% in 2005 to 15.2% in fall of 2008 in the STEM disciplines. Please note that, however, this percentage of women faculty around, we are now around 30 to 40%, is still a little bit short of our student population, where our student population is more than 50 to 55% women. How do we compare then with our peers? Shown on the left-hand side of this, shown on the left-hand panel of this slide, is our gender distribution, and as compared to the CIC institutions. CIC stands for the Committee on Institutional Cooperation and is comprised of the Big Ten schools, University of Chicago, and UIC is also included in these numbers. As compared to the CIC, our gender distribution is slightly better. We are 32.7% women, whereas the average CIC is 30%. However, what is really clear on the right-hand panel is that in terms of race and ethnicity, and here we're focusing only on numbers of Native American shown in dark blue, African American shown in gold, and Latino-Latina shown in sky blue, that the University of Illinois total is clearly ahead of its peers by at least 3 percentage points. However, this does not mean that we have reached the type of diversity we would like. Let's examine who are our peers and who is our nearest competitor. I'm sorry for the busyness of this slide, but the data is available in the handouts at your tables. If you focus on the highlighted bars, they represent UIC, University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and UIS at the bottom of the panel. Urbana ranks second, and UIC ranks third with respect to African-American faculty. And UIC is number one, and Urbana number two with respect to Latino-Latina faculty. Urbana ranks third for Native American faculty, and UIC ranks 10th. The numbers at UIS shown below also compare favorably. Nevertheless, if you add up the total number of African American, Latino, Latina, and Native American underrepresented faculty, clearly UIC and Urbana rank one and two in the CIC institutions with 10 and 8.9% faculty, respectively. As you look at the rankings of our two, Urbana and Chicago among the CIC institutions, clearly we stand out for diversity. Our nearest competitor is the University of Michigan, which despite its precedent-setting efforts and the central position it gained with respect to gender and race equity in the lead up to and the aftermath of the Supreme Court decisions, is still a full percentage point behind Urbana. We as a university collectively need to embrace the potential for strength that this provides us, and we need to use this as an opportunity to be a real leader in this realm. Have these increases in number been sudden? Not quite. It's been gradual. And as shown in this slide, there's been a 50% increase in the last 10 years and a doubling in the percentages of underrepresented faculty in the past 20 years. However, the numbers in any category of tenure-track faculty have remained in the single-digit numbers. Is this diversity reflected in our leadership? This is a question posed to us at the November board meeting, and shown here on this slide are who are our leaders, our heads, and RAMP administrators. Shown on the left-hand panel again is the gender distribution, and while we have, interestingly, our RAMP administrators reflect the gender distribution in our tenure faculty, whereas it's less equally reflected amongst the department heads. The department heads are about 25% female and 75% male.
Could you explain what RAMP means, please?
Yes. RAMP stands for Resource Allocation Management Program, which is a term coined by the Illinois Board of Higher Education. And for it's a budgeting device that details how dollars are spent and where it comes from. So in our, at the University of Illinois, and I believe this happened in 1970, 75, something like that, RAMP administrators have been identified as individuals who are executive, administrative, and have primary responsibility for organizing and directing the institution. They include the chancellors, the vice chancellors, the deans, the president, the vice presidents, and senior administrators. And the total number of RAMP administrators are about 67 right now. And in terms of total numbers for heads, we have 277 heads. Shown on the right-hand panel is the race ethnicity distribution, with the blue bars indicating the Native American, African American plus Latino, Latina,